Hello, neighbours. Welcome to Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. I'm Ivan Emke, your host. This is episode 16 of season 2, Labrador, the big land, the third word in the official title of this province. Even though its territory constitutes over 70% of the land mass of said province, the name Labrador was bestowed by a Portuguese explorer, João Fernandes Lavrador. Lavrador in Portuguese means farmer or laborer, so it makes sense that on today's show we head to Central Labrador, the Happy Valley Goose Bay area, where you will find a pocket of farmers, along with sandy soil, no rocks, long days, but a short season. Farmers here have their own special challenges: high freight costs, the lack of an abattoir, no local dairy, limited chicken or egg operations, and climate challenges, but the produce from these farms is highly valued by local folks. It's estimated there are only about 200 acres of cleared agricultural land in Labrador, though there is a great deal of potential. This acreage comes with a small number of farmers. On this show, we talk to one of them.
I really wanted to start out farming, doing it organically, but the economics of that here in Labrador just didn't make that possible. Now, of course, you know you're talking to a person from a region where there is virtually no spring. People are still investing in farming, so they wouldn't be doing that if they saw that there was no future. There are still a lot of really good things happening.
Today we meet Des Sellers. He operates Nature's Best Farm just outside of Happy Valley. He produces vegetables and is one of the diehards, as he calls it. He's been farming there for over two decades now. He's just beside the Pie Center for Northern Boreal Food Systems, which is mentioned in our chat. I know that the title is a mouthful, but this show is all about filling mouths. The center was originally the farm of Frank and Joyce Pie. It's now operated by the Labrador Institute of Memorial University. Come on along. The weather's grand. Don't mind the occasional mosquito or black fly or midge. They only bite once each. I started by asking Des how COVID-19 affected his farm over this past year.
Well, it did affect me, both good and bad. It shut me down in March because of, potential exposure and that kind of stuff. So, you got to go into the quarantine phase. And, I lost the tail end of my business because usually my business wraps up by April or early May. That was a downer. But on the upside of it, I was able to apply for the Canada Emergency Wage Subsidy. So that kind of helped negate some of that loss of revenue that I would otherwise have had not available to me. So that really took me through to August. And luckily, the stars lined up. We had a good season. There was the provincial transplant program that allowed us to put in more transplants and supply more products. So once the end of August kicked in and with sales, then as a business, you were good to go again, And it was a good year, unlike the previous year. So it worked out quite well for us. It was one of the better years that I've had, as it turned out. I was very grateful for all of that. But you were into a year where you really never knew, in addition to all the other potential things that could affect your business, then you really didn't know how COVID was, because how is an open market supposed to work? And you could be shut down in week one. And so there was a lot of uncertainty around it. In retrospect, there was no change to anything by way of markets or marketing.
What are you growing these days? Did it make any changes in terms of what you've been growing?
Over the years, markets have changed. And of course, as a business person, you've got to be responsive to your markets. So I used to produce anywhere between 10 to 12 or 15 different varieties of foods. But now I'm kind of concentrating, believe it or not, still on the four mains: cabbage, carrot, turnip, potatoes. They are staples and people certainly love them over, what's more commercially available. But now, having said all that, this year I'm going to be producing more of the salad mixes as well as the early greens. Of course, too, in the fall, people enjoy the sugar snap peas and those kinds of things. So this year I'm going to tie with cilantro and dill as some early markets, maybe a few other things, and just to have that, just to see where the market might go. Because typically when you're growing the four mains, well, they're not going to come due in any meaningful way till in September. But then you've got you're starting farming and expenses are rolling out, and that period of time from May to up to September, that if you had marketable opportunities there, then we should explore.
What's the farming situation like there?
Well, you know, the diehards are still around.
That's good to know.
Things are kind of moving in the right direction. Of course, I don't think it's moving as fast as we would all like, but that, you know, I think that's going to be the case anyway. People are still investing in farming, so they wouldn't be doing that if they saw that there was no future. And of course, we've got cattle in the area. There's more and more production happening. For example, I've increased potato production by 50%, and I can easily do it again. But other farmers are doing it as well, and they all got their own selected market. The big thing that we really need here now, I think that would be really a game changer for the area, would be an abattoir and getting that in place and getting some kind of a bird allocation that's been talked about in various meetings. You're gradually broadening the landscape for just agriculture so that it is a little bit more balanced, and we're able to kind of make use of the animals and the animal resources. So then it makes agriculture truly more diversified. And that's important as well. It would grow agriculture here in Labrador, and it would create more opportunities for young people to A, get involved, and to hire a labor force. If you look at the area as a whole, I mean, we still have a limited number of individuals. It's still mainly into vegetable and somewhat limited fruit production. So far, there's no real animal production on a commercial basis. So we had the fruits and more vegetables and more animals, you know, you'd have far more engagement at all levels.
You mentioned the beef cattle. Were some of those the Herefords that the province brought in? Were some of them in Labrador then, ended up in Labrador?
Yeah, they're down on the Dinsmore farm. And I guess he's growing that stock in the hopes that I'm sure that there will be an abattoir. And
he wanted to get a beef slaughtered. Where would he have to go?
Well, he'd either have to go to somewhere central Newfoundland or on the West Coast, or he'd have to go to New Brunswick. And I'm not sure which is the shorter distance.
That's quite a trip.
People bring in birds in here and they have to go to New Brunswick to get them.
I understand that with the Pie Center, there's been this monthly farmers meeting. It strikes me that that would be a good thing to do all over the place. Has that worked out for farmers? Like, is it a valuable thing for them?
Well, it is valuable. And I mean, you know, there's no pressure associated with it. So people come as they are able. But it's really good because not only is it an opportunity for farmers to come together in a sort of a bit of an organized way, but it helps them come together with an institute that's very much trying to take on research and food security and food sovereignty, all of those big issues, but also bring it down to an issue so that we can look at how we could probably best move forward as a region, because some of these issues they're societal based, they require money, they require research, they require expertise, and that gives a bit of a formal process to the work that's required.
You know, one of the things with being a farmer is sometimes you have to end up taking all the risk when you're doing a new crop or something like that. And the advantage is to see somebody else do it first and then look at the technology and see if it would work out. Are there things that you would like to see, whether it be season extension things or whatever? Are there some things like that you think might happen there?
Oh, absolutely. Like, I've been involved for a number of years with Dr. John L. Aberdeen with the biochar research. I've worked in the summer of 2018 with some turnip trials, and I'm on the advisory committee with the Labrador Institute, which will be looking at research in the near and into the future. But I just really believe into the importance of doing that kind of work, because as a farmer, it helps you can be exposed to new ways of doing things or asking a question whereby you can get that kind of support from them and their expertise. One of the things, for example, that we talked about in our farmer meetings is rather than necessarily going out and trying to look at new crops that might be marketable in the area, I made the suggestion, well, why don't we get really good at what we're already doing and make sure that, you know, we feel comfortable that this represents best practice. Like here in Labrador, is there a better potato to produce? Because it's always a race here to put potatoes into the ground, and then you're into your frost season almost any month from the 1st of September on. And then if you get any of those potatoes that in any way are nicked by frost, then, you know, you're into like spoilage issues, disease issues. And that goes true for all the other crops of food. Like if we're talking about the mains, like what are some really good carrot varieties we should be looking at? Same thing for the turnips, rutabagas, and so on. So that's the kind of work that we need to be doing. You know, like one of the worst things I think you can do in farming is to keep doing the same thing, especially under the umbrella now of climate change. And where it's such a risk-taking enterprise, it's important to be able to kind of help organize the resources to be able to work for you. So as a business person, you can help mitigate some of those risks.
There's a land of boundless beauty where the untamed rivers run and majestic snow-capped mountains rise to meet the morning sun. There are silent sunlit valleys undiscovered, unexplored. It's a home for free of spirit. It's a land called Labrador. Legends of our people spoken in the language of the land tell of hard times and injuries strangers would not understand. As they trekked across the tundra from the highlands to the shore, promise of the land is broken and our people suffered more. Let her unspoiled waters flow. Let her children live in freedom in the valleys of the snow. Lift your voices, sons and daughters, like you've never done before. Let your song rise through the darkness in this land called Labrador. Lift your voices, sons and daughters, like you've never done before. Let your song rise through the darkness in this land called Labrador. In this land called Labrador.
That was one of the classics of Labrador music, A Land Called Labrador by Harry Martin. Let's head back to our conversation with Des Sellers, where our talk includes reflecting on the challenges of farming in the subarctic, which is increasingly caught in the throes of climate disruption.
But have you seen things change in terms of the climate change? Are water levels changing? And
there's always a concern for me in July. Yeah. If I don't tree rains in July, that's what it comes down to, that spread out over that month, then it's very risky. Up here, your frost-free date for most farmers is June 15th. And then after the 21st or 22nd of June, every day is getting shorter. So realistically, your growing month is the end of June, all of July. For most crops, your crops are either well-developing or developed to probably 75%, depending on variety and so on. But then August and September, well, then they're just petering along. That makes July a critical month. So, you know, it's a bit of a juggling act. And I remember being into meetings where they said that, you know, with climate change, you can expect a 2-degree increase there in Happy Valley over time. So, you know, we have to get ready for that piece of the agricultural puzzle as well, you know.
Well, your last frost-free day is June 15th. When's generally your first frost of the fall?
Well, usually around the 7th of September. I've went out in July and saw my potato field flattened with frost, because we're in the subarctic. You can get frost here every single month.
So you've got about 80 frost-free days or so, maybe?
Yeah, well, we go after anywhere from 60 to 80, 90 growing day plants. And depending on the, again, the variety, some are a little more hardy and they can stand frost. In fact, you leave them out till they do get frost.
Right.
It improves the flavor and the profile of them and so on.
Do you start any of your own plants in advance?
Yeah, I have for years. I've done it. But now with the transplant program, that helps a lot. But I will still continue to put in plants all the time because, you know, they're always coming out with new hybrids and new varieties. I think it's important to keep changing it up so that you know what varieties eventually over time that you should be working with. And you don't want to miss any opportunities. If you keep doing the same old, you're going to get what you've always got, of course. I'm having about 4,000 to 5,000 cabbage transplants come in under the transplant program. I'll still grow maybe 1,000, 2,000 of different variety of the cabbages because, A, they look really appealing. I just wanted to make sure they're suitable for the environment. Which ones can you put in as direct seed as opposed to putting it in as a transplant?
One of the things I've been surprised with sometimes there in Happy Valley Goose Bay is the number of people who have small greenhouses. Are you seeing more of that? Are people doing more stuff in their backyards these days?
Oh, yeah. There's quite a number of people here in Goose Bay that you would never ever see or would never ever guess, but they have their own little backyards. And they'll put in their foods that they're going to eat, their potatoes or their peas or whatever the case may be. And, of course, as part of the poison center down there, they want to encourage that. If people do not have, for example, their own backyard space, there's going to be opportunities for them down there to be able to have their own allotments.
That social aspect too, where you can ask somebody else as well a question. If you've got a community garden, that's kind of valuable as well. Or you see somebody else's carrots, you say, well, what kind are those? So there's a lot of learning that can take place there too, I guess.
Absolutely. Like a lot of people were quite surprised by the size of the carrots that I was able to grow this year on a commercial basis. And of course, then they want to know, well, what are they and how they can get them and so on, which is a wonderful thing.
Are you growing carrots that are like the rainbow colors, you know, the yellows and the...
I've grown them in the past. I don't do quite as much as I have done in the past because, you know, my main market is the Maine carrot. But, I mean, I've grown a lot of them and grown them intensely as snacking carrots, which gives you a wonderful color profile because you can get the white, yellow, reds, and purples. So you put those into a pack and they look quite appealing. I remember your interview with Andy Wright saying, you know, he's having a carrot following up here. We have a carrot following as well. And people look towards those colored carrots as well as some of the smaller orange colored carrots for even snacking carrots for their dogs. They're, you know, we can't forget our furry canine friends. So, you know, there's opportunity there too.
It's a bit like eggs. If you get multicolored eggs, people think that they're better for you. Is that true for multicolored carrots, I wonder? Do people think they're healthier?
It is true.
It is true. Oh, really?
The red carrot is very, very rich in lycopenes, a lot more richer than the orange carrot. So, you know, it's equivalent to if you can't grow tomatoes, well, that's one of the real benefits of eating tomato. You can get it into a carrot.
Because lycopene's the thing in the tomatoes you look for, right?
Yeah. So all carrots are not the same.
So you spent a lot of time back in the day, you know, working on, well, the way forward, I guess it was called, on agriculture. And there are lots of ideas about what to do in terms of policies and so on. Do you have any reflections on that now in 2021, where we're going and where we could be going? And
that kind of work that brought us all together on a number of occasions to help bring all the players together, you know, players being like farmers, as well as those people that are involved in distribution of food to policy workers and so on. All that kind of down to the agricultural work sector plan that we have and is still around. And so those goals and aspirations are all there and there's progress being made. And it's good to see that it is moving forward. I mean, some of it's moving forward in getting regional equipment, recognizing the priorities for the area here in Labrador anyway. The only thing is I don't think we necessarily have all the resources coming together on a regular basis. I still think that there's still a need for far more conversations to be had, kind of help move some of those agendas forward. People are still sort of in some ways into their silos, and there's not the kind of rich discussion that needs to be had to help overcome some of those issues. All my friends are all around me. It's not hard to see why I love it.
Another classic Labrador song, that's Jacinda Beals with her song Labrador to the Core. Today I'm talking with Des Sellers, the farmer behind Nature's Best Farm in Happy Valley, Labrador. We start this section with some comments on the need for cold storage and processing capacity for vegetable farmers selling to retail outlets. And then we go on to talk about kelp and what to put in a mix for seedlings and how to tell when spring has arrived and so on.
Is there a cold storage plan for Labrador?
Yeah, there was a regional cold storage request put out. It's being built. See, the thing is people like myself, we already have cold storage. It's not the cold storage part that we're kind of really looking for, or at least I'm not looking for. It's the handling, the process and handling. If we go forward with producing more vegetables, eventually, as a producer, as a grower, you got to look at how are you going to move along your handling needs for your retail clients. So if those orders get bigger, well, then, you know, the processing of carrots, for example, requires, even after being in storage, you've got to take them and wash them and bag them. And same thing with potatoes and so on. So that requires added layers of handling before you get it to market.
If you're dealing with a retailer that wants GAP certification or whatever, then that's another issue. If you have vegetables from a variety of growers all together in one place.
And that's why it's not as simple as having a regional storage facility. Is what are the rules so then we can implement those rules so that we're all in compliance.
Some people are trying to use a lot of kelp or seafood byproduct or whatever in fertilization. Is that a possibility? Do you ever use any of that stuff or is it available?
Oh, no, I've been using it for years. Actually, I've got quite a lot of it. I've been using that since 2009 because I really wanted to start out farming, doing it organically, but the economics of that here in Labrador just didn't make that possible. I've ordered over the years quite a lot from Twillingate, actually, a company called Shellex, and some from the Barry Group in southern Newfoundland. But over the years, crab meal, shrimp meal, kelp, and also from New Brunswick, pelletized chicken manure, all of those. I like using those natural products mainly because when you get a natural product, you just don't get one of the three or three of the three things. You'll get a broad spectrum of nutrients that you put in your soil, and that comes through on the taste and flavor and vigor of the vegetable. And while I haven't been able to really go full organic, I try to fall somewhere in between.
You probably test your soil every year or whatever. Have you seen it change over the years?
I won't do anything without a soil test. I've gone full circle on that. And that's simply because, like, as a producer, I'm not going to put anything into the ground on a commercial basis that I don't need to be putting into the ground because, A, you control your soil out of balance, and B, it makes no economic sense. And, of course, you don't want to be overdosing your soil on any one thing or even on the micronutrient side of it.
Well, some people swear by things like wood ash.
Well, I use wood ash all the time. I use biochar, which is nothing but all burnt wood. You just, the only difference between wood ash and biochar is that wood ash is burned in more higher oxygen conditions. Right? Wood ash helped actually the population of this province from early times because there was no local stores to go and get lime. But people knew that if you use the stove ashes and sprinkle a little bit on the soil, just not too much. And of course, that's what it was doing. You were putting the calcium into the soil and raising the pH up so vegetables could grow better.
Do you have a favorite recipe? You probably wouldn't tell us. For your seedlings, like you, what kind of mix of compost versus soil?
Like it's always better if you could prepare your seedling mix 1 year ahead of actually using it because it gives it a chance to mellow. But to put things together, especially if you're using something that's a bit caustic like wood ash, you'd probably be a lot more successful. You don't need necessarily a lot of ingredients to make a good seedling mix. Just take your regular garden soil, it's good healthy soil, disease free and all that. Mix it with leaves. You put in your wood ash in your case or whatever that you want to do because the soil will buffer that out over time. And I always like to add a little bit of good sheep manure or poultry manure or whatever case may be, or a little bit of fish or so on, and put a little bit of bone meal in it. Your wood ash is going to give you your calcium and your potassium. Your bone meal is going to give you your phosphorus. You will get your nitrogen from your manures, but it will be broken down and you'll end up essentially with a very, very good compost.
What's the first thing that where you realize that spring is really here, what's the first thing you do with the farm or the garden or a thing you do on the land where you just sort of breathe it in and say, yeah, another season has begun?
Yeah, well, now, of course, you know you're talking to a person from a region where there is no, virtually no spring. Like there is probably about 3/4 of a kilometer from the end of my road to where my farm is, and it's an agricultural road. And in June, I'm still pushing snow. The only time that I can know it's spring is the days are getting longer and the snow is starting to settle down a little bit more. I can't do anything out on the land with regard to that. And of course, goes back to we have those frost cycles even right up till the 15th of June. Yeah. Go from winter to summer almost instantly.
So your first sign of spring is you can take the snowplow off your tractor in June.
Something like that. Yeah. Having said all that, the days get nicer and longer. And usually by May, even the latter part of April, you know, you can start to get stuff out into your greenhouse to prep ahead for the June transport we do. And it can get quite warm, so but you're just waiting for the snow to peter off. Usually by the 24th of May, I'm plowing, but you know, you will be plowing in frosted ground too sometimes. But it'll start, you'll get really warm days, you'll get really even hot days, but it'll take a while for that soil to warm up.
You have to get one of those newfangled plows that have the heated metal blades so you can warm the soil up as you're turning the frozen sod.
Send me the cold port.
Yeah.
There are still a lot of really good things happening. Newfoundland Horticultural Society, too, has been providing potatoes to the areas for members, you know, at a very attractive price point. We've got a population of about 30,000. There's a tremendous market here for potatoes. In one store alone, there's over 4 million pounds sold in a year.
And most everybody who's growing things is able to sell it locally. Pretty, like, there's not really a problem with the market.
There is no problem with the market. Everything that's produced is sold. It's just a matter of being able to kind of help move that along. And there's markets that haven't even really been tapped in. Like, if you look at Central Labrador as the agricultural area, the north and south parts, coastal areas, that's where the highest food insecurity exists. There's a real role here in this area to be able to address some of those issues. The years and the research has shown that we can produce in this area.
So it sounds like good things are happening, but there's still more that could be done.
We all move forward and we all live in hope.
That sounds like a good place to end.
Yeah, well, thank you for your interest.
All right, well, take care.
All right, it was good to talk to you, and hopefully we'll get to talk again soon.
Okay, see ya.
Bye.
Des is famous for his carrots, and I've met a number of farmers who, likewise, would be happy to stack their carrots up against any other farmer in the province and beyond. There certainly are some outstanding carrots in the province. Indeed, there should be an annual contest pitting them against each other, a kind of a provincial carrot Olympic of sorts. Now that's something I could sink my teeth into.
Things are kind of moving in the right direction. Of course, I don't think it's moving as fast as we would all like. One of the worst things I think you can do in farming is to keep doing the same thing, especially under the umbrella of climate change. Well, why don't we get really good at what we're already doing? People are still in some ways into their silos, and there's not the kind of rich discussion that needs to be had.
This has been Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. To listen to other episodes of this show or for more information, go to fittoeatnl.ca. The songs for today's show were A Land Called Labrador from Harry Martin and Labrador to the Core by Jacinda Beals. The theme music, Cluck Old Hen, was performed this week by the Blackberry Bushes. This is a production of Kitchen Table Communications. I'm Ivan Emke. Join me again next time. I'll be right here. Happy trails.
The years and the research has shown that we can produce in this area.